Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. And I'm here today with my friend in hockey, Bruce McCurdy.
Hello, David.
Hey, Bruce. Another loss.
Three in a row.
Yeah, not a very happy moment for Oilers fans. They're at real 500, 8 wins and 8 losses. So that's okay. I mean, I would have taken that. Someone said 16 games in with the schedule you have. Would you take a real 500, Mr. Oilers fan? And I would say, yes, I will take that. So, and it wasn't a terrible game, Bruce, this 4-1 loss to the Florida Panthers. There were some good things, and unfortunately, more bad things. I'm still working on my cold here.
Yeah.
So, Bruce, we're going to do our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. What's your good thing?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I got to go with the I'm still trying to find a good thing.
Okay, what's your good thing? My good thing was the first period. Man, the Oilers came out storming. And they had 4 grade A chances, Bruce, to none for the Panthers. Cam Talbot didn't face 1 grade A chance in the entire first period. The Oilers had 4, including like a couple of like 5 alarmers.
Man, Luongo.
Ay, ay, ay. Wow. That's the kind of goaltending, Bruce, that will win you a hockey game. That's the kind of goaltending that a team needs if they are going to win hockey games. And the Oilers have had it a few times this year, mainly when Mikko Koskinen has been in that a couple times. And, you know, Luongo provided it. He kept his team in there. He just robbed Draisaitl. He robbed Ty Ratty a couple times this game. And
Draisaitl twice.
The Oilers out chance, turns to grade A chances. I counted 8 for the Oilers and 6 for the Panthers. So the Oilers were not outplayed in this game.
That's your good thing then.
It was the first period was my good thing. And they played well enough to have a 1-0 lead heading in, or maybe even a 2-0 lead, but they just couldn't get it.
2-0 at the 5-minute mark. Those were 2 all-world saves by Luongo right off the bat.
Good for him. What was your good thing?
Oh, yeah. I got nothing but respect for Bobby Lou at this late stage of his career. Yeah. Okay. Well, kind of covered the waterfront there, but I'm going to go with Leon Draisaitl as my good thing. I thought he had a remarkable game, really. I gave him the highest grade of any Oiler. I just thought, we saw him in all 3 zones. We saw him playing a strong defensive game. I thought he was the only Oiler who was any good at all in the faceoff circle. Holy man. 52% for Draisaitl, and next best on the team was 38%. And they were all getting crushed, right?
That's not good.
Anyway, that was their undoing at another point. But he had 8 shot attempts, including 5 on goal to lead the team. Of course, he did score the goal. He was robbed 2 other times by Luongo. Well, you know, I liked a lot of his play in other parts of the ice. He was in full beast mode in the third period. And when he gets in that situation, man, does he ever look good.
What did you think of McClellan moving him up to play with?
This was the sort of game where you might as well try that sort of thing and see what happens, right? I mean, obviously, McClellan sort of at his last resort, 3rd game in a row, trailing all game, basically, and you know, desperate in the third period, so he tried something different. There was a play there along the end there where they went into the boards, and Leon held the puck under the blade of his skate for about 3 or 4 seconds, and he was looking around, and and they were trying to check, they're going at his feet like crazy, trying to dig the puck out. And then when he decided, he just booted his foot forward and slipped the puck right through the crowd into an Oiler on the other side of it. I mean, that takes some kind of strength as well as skill and smarts, really, to pull off a maneuver like that. And when Leon is going, he's got all of that going on. It's wonderful to see.
I didn't mind the move to Draisaitl and McDavid, and, you know, you might as well try it. It's no big deal. I hope they don't stick with it next game, but I didn't mind it. You know what I was craving, Bruce? I was craving like a fourth line with you know, Cooper Marody, Tyler Benson, and Jesse Puljujärvi. Like, I was creating like a little bit more skill, honestly, in that in the Oilers team. That's what I was thinking about. And you know, it's a rare thing for an NHL coach to go with at least an Oilers coach to go with an all skill fourth line. We haven't seen it maybe since the Kidd line in 1990. Maybe we've seen it a few times.
You've got two guys you mentioned, plus Cameron Hebig. They are a Kidd line down in Bakersfield right now, and they're ripping it up. They had 7 points today in a 5-4 overtime win. Cooper Marody, 3 points in the game winner in overtime. I mean, that's a guy knocking at the door. And he's knocking a hell of a lot louder than either Jesse Puljujärvi or Kyle Yamamoto, in my opinion, even though he's down there and they're up here.
Yeah, like a Kidd line with Marody and Hebig and Benson, maybe. Like, give it a go. Like, are we really going to miss Kyle Brodziak and Zach Cassian in a game so much? Jesse Puljujärvi or Yamamoto either. Anyway, that's maybe a topic for another day. So my bad thing, Bruce, was Cam Talbot. And I know that he didn't let in any stinkers necessarily, but man, you got to make a save for this team. You got to, Bruce, three of the first four grade A chances on Cam Talbot went in the net, in the Oilers net. Mm-hmm. He's got to save those. He's got to stop some of those shots. He's got to win. They're grade A chances, but you got to block some of them. You can't have them going in the net. The one on the power play I didn't like, you know, where they were making such a big deal, like he was screened. Well, get a little closer to the screen maybe, or don't be so, you know, he was way out of position to make that save. He wasn't even close to being able to get over there. He was completely rooked by the play. And it was just an average NHL play though. So like he was out of position. His foot was on the outside of the net. I didn't like his play at all, and he's got to make some big saves if he's going to be the Oilers' starting goalie. And right now, I think they should go with Koskinen. So that's my bad thing. I was not happy with Cam Talbot's play.
Yeah, I graded him generously. I was halfway between a 5 and a 6, and part of it was probably me outguessing myself, saying I've been tough on this guy lately. If I'm halfway in between, maybe I should give him the benefit of the doubt. Because I'm not a hater, but I'm with you. You know, there's just not enough big saves happening. Like, he made one huge stop to keep it at 3-1. Well, that same thing happened in Washington. He made a huge save to keep it at 4-2. Well, guess what? It stayed 4-2. And the game was already over by the time he made that big save.
And it stayed 3-1.
Yeah.
And his MO is the first good scoring chance goes in. I mean, that's
a lot, eh?
Does happen a little bit too much. And like, I don't want to be a hater either, because Cam Talbot has played really well for the Edmonton Oilers in the past, but I'm not seeing it. I'm not a believer at this point. He's got to win me over again. And it's not like he's letting in terrible goals. It's not like a ton of B chances or C chances are getting in, but you got to stop those A chances or your team is not going to win. You got to stop 3 out of 4 of them at least and not let 3 out of 4 of them in. Yeah. So where are we? Is it your bad thing now?
Oh, my bad thing. This is a cumulative bad thing, but this is the third game in a row. The same thing has happened where the Oilers lost a defensive zone faceoff, and within 10 seconds or so, the puck was in the back of their net. Now, you can tell me, how often does that happen over the course of the year, that a face-off loss leads directly to a goal? Not that often. It's certainly not an every game thing or anywhere close.
Oh, it's really rare. It's one of the most, except on the power play and shorthanded, where the face-offs are really big. Face-offs at even strength are a bit overrated in terms of leading to goals. They're completely overrated. So, three in a row, that's very rare. It's more like one in five games.
Pretty sure these were all at even strength. The first game, it was Nugent Hopkins. And, you know, he even got the opposition center got kicked out, so he was going up against their number two guy. Lost that draw, and it wound up in the net. And last game, it was McDavid. And tonight, it took a few seconds, but it was Strom, who had a weak game in my estimation. And he lost. Actually, he almost sawed it off. But you know what happened? And this is part of the problem is that the wingers were no help to him. They didn't go in to give the support off of the faceoff. And, I mean, Lucic, he skated right past everything and out to the point. And then he circled all the way over to the other wing chasing the puck, but he never did get near the puck carrier or cut out any passes. And in the meantime, I mean, if he skated through the dot, he would have had the puck because it was there. So, you know, a little support would be nice, but the whole structure, like the team defensive zone play collapsed immediately after the faceoff loss. And there were guys like Lucic, but Strom, like they were all over the place.
Yeah, Strom lost his man and bad things happened.
And I mean, that's the kind of thing, I'm sorry, after three games in a row, that's on the coach. Like if they're not working on that tomorrow and Saturday in practice, and a big time on Saturday, I would suggest with the next game Sunday, because that's just gifting goals when you have a defensive breakdown and the other team wins a faceoff and makes two or three passes and bang, it's in your net. It just can't happen on a regular basis, and it has been.
So my number, Bruce, is 73.6, and that is the Oilers' clearance rate on the penalty kill right now. They're 27th overall in the NHL, so they have one of the worst penalty kills in the NHL, which is what they had most of last year. It came on at the end. And tonight's goal was deja vu all over again, as they say. It was Zach Cassian failing to stop a cross-seam pass, although Strome was equally to blame. Both of them should have had – if you look at it, and I watched it a few times, because I remember I've heard Trent Yanni talk about stick position in the defensive zone. And both Cassian and Strom had their sticks in the wrong place and cross-team pass and a goal. Like they've been working on it. Excuse me, they're better at it this year than they were last year, obviously. Some cross-team passes are going to get through. But that was one that they should have had, I thought. It was not – Strom should have had it. Cassian might have had it. And they were just both a little out to lunch. And that's what's going to bring you down on the PK. I don't know much to say about the PK overall, like in terms of structural problems or personnel problems. I don't think that's it. Haven't identified any major issue that needs changing yet. What about you? Have you seen anything?
Well, those cross-seam passes, but this is hardly the first year that's been a problem. And I mean, you talk about Zach Cassian, like anytime he's killed penalties.
He shouldn't be on the PK. Okay, he's a problem. He shouldn't be on the PK anymore, I don't think. I'm not a believer in Zach Cassian on the PK after last year. And play like that doesn't encourage
him. It doesn't come naturally to him. He doesn't seem to occupy the lanes. Like, he almost never blocks shots. And, you know, that can be a choice thing or it can just be a positioning thing. And I don't think that he lacks gumption or anything like that. Like, that's not the issue. He just isn't in the right place. And the shooter can shoot around him because, I mean, he's got and that's one stat that they do keep. Every time somebody blocks a shot, it means they were in the lane, right?
Yeah, and here's my hot take of the day, Bruce. Milan Lucic on the PK. Matt Hendricks.
Well, I like that on defense. I heard somebody on the talk radio today talking about moving Lucic to defense.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Okay.
It was a text to one of
them. Here's my thought. If Matt Hendricks can do it, he can do it. And he's going to earn his money somehow. And he might as well do it doing the grunt work. So try him out. He can't be worse than Zach Cassian. I'll tell you. He will not be worse than Zach Cassian on the PK. And he might be better because I think he's a smart – I think Lucic is a smart player. And a lot of the PK work is about being smart and diligent. So anyway, we'll leave it at that.
Bruce, speed is less of an issue on the PK, like being in the right place. And that's especially true if you've got a slow D-man. He tends to see a lot of PK work because that's where he can just play his position properly and not have to rely on foot speed. And worth a shot.
What's your number?
Well, yeah, I'm going to go back to the one I alluded to earlier, face-offs. I mean, I alluded to him on Drysdale and on the good thing and the bad thing, but here you go. Strome, 4 out of 13, 31%. Brodziak, 5 out of 14, 36%. Guy brought in here because of faceoffs. Draisaitl, the one exception, 11 for 21, 52%. Nuge, 3 for 8, 38%. McDavid, 1 for 9, 11%, after going 2 for 12 in the last game. And you spend too much time chasing the puck. I mean, I know that a lot of the analytics folks have generally concluded faceoffs are overrated, but I still rate them. Maybe overrate them, but I rate them. I mean, it's a possession, and it's the one possession battle that they actually keep track of. And it doesn't always square up with everything else that happens in the game, but the Oilers are chasing the puck, and tonight, again, it cost them a goal off the faceoff. So it gets to be a sore point when they start hitting you on the scoreboard.
Indeed. Well, if Brodziak can't win a faceoff, sit him down. Like, call up Marody and Hebig, and let's see them go on the fourth line. That might bring some life to this team. That's my recipe for it. And Lucic on the PK. Yeah. But I'd rather, if I had one pick for a lineup change, it would be Hebig and Marody in the lineup next game. Let's see what they can do on the fourth line. Have a kid line for your fourth line. Pick Yamamoto, Puljujärvi, put him out there with them, and let those guys roll. Let's see what happens.
Well, the fourth line that they have been putting out there, I mean, tonight was a fairly typical night for them, and they got outshot 6-2 while they were out on the game. So,
our fourth line has outplayed the other team's fourth line, Bruce, maybe three or four games. Maybe they played them even a couple times, and the rest they've been outplayed. Like, that's how I see it, seriously. And I'm not – why? You have other options. You got some young guys. Bring them up. Let's see what happens. Marody looked great.
Yeah, he did. In the two games he played, he looked excellent.
So he lost his job because of injury.
A lot of puck battles. And, in the meantime, I mean, Brodziak, I'm rooting for him hard. I mean, he's an old-time Oiler, and it's nice to see him back, St. Paul boy. But, you know, his game hasn't been good. And if you look at his results, last time I looked, he was on the ice for 4 goals, 4-11 against. I mean, your fourth line can't be getting lit up for that many goals. And that's even strength. That's not including on the penalty kill where he's also had his issues. So add it all up, and that two-goal game was nice, but it's not enough.
That is headache time, and it's not just a sinus headache. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there. Thanks for talking, man.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. They're going to turn this around. This schedule is brutal. This should have been my bad thing. It's how brutal. Like, they played 10 road games before anyone else, including a trip to Europe.
You got to kick those excuses out from under them.
No, it's not an excuse, David. This is an actual reason. The boys had no gas in the tank. All right. And, I mean, they've flown all over, not just this continent, but overseas. I mean, it's time, and it'll come back. But I think they're at a schedule deficit that they're certain to regain, and I'm sure that, you know, they're going to kick out of this little slide. But I think it's largely explained by the difficulty of the sked.
All right. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.